If you're reading lists of stat articles, PDFs, newsletters you swore you're going to get to, listen up.
We've been using AudioRead, and it's legit. It turns anything you don't have time to read into audio you will actually listen to.
Drop in a link, upload a file, even forward an email. It converts it into natural-sounding audio, not that robotic voice crap.
And it sends it straight to your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or whatever you're already using.
Perfect for drives, workouts, or just giving your eyes a break. Super easy, super useful.
And here's the good part. Most people get 7 days of premium. But Dimples and I, we hooked you up with 30 days free. Just use code CWDATB at audioread.com.
That's CWDATB at audioread.com. Give it a spin. You'll thank us later. Here's a pro tip. If you're going to try speaking the local language, maybe don't wing it after two glasses of wine and a 14-day Duolingo streak.
Yeah, unless you want to tell your Italian driver you're aroused instead of excited. True story.
Or tell a French waiter you're pregnant when you just meant you're full. It's a fine line, folks, and Speak Language Center is here to keep you on the right side of it.
Their travel series is a pre-trip glow-up you didn't know you needed. We're talking real human teachers, live online classes, and actual cultural know-how so you don't show up sounding like a confused menu item.
Learn Italian, French, Portuguese, Spanish, solo or with your travel crew. It's laid-back, conversation-based, and honestly, a hell of a lot better than yelling, English? English? In a train station.
Go to speaklanguageacademy.com and use code TRAVEL10 for 10% off.
That's speaklanguageacademy.com, because pointing only gets you so far.
Speak Language Center, connection through conversation, because connection beats confusion every time.
Welcome, fellow Lushes. Come on in, pull up a bar stool, and enjoy some cocktails with Dimples and the Beard.
Did you ever think Andrew Dice Clay was funny?
Parts of him, yeah, I did.
Do you still think he's funny?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Anyway, welcome back to another episode of Cocktails with Dimples and the Beard.
I'm going to take that. Ron says no.
Oh, I think he's fucking hilarious.
Oh. Well.
No.
Never.
No, I'm not going to. That's never been my thing. I got why people thought he was funny, yeah. But it was never my thing. It's easy.
Different and exploded.
It's just easy, simple, stupid. I always said, nobody thought Dennis Miller was funny. And I always said, that's because you weren't fucking smart enough. You didn't understand what he was talking about. But what he was saying, if you got what he was saying, was funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
But you had to be a semi-intelligent person. Yeah. Any fucking retard could laugh at Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh.
And they did.
Yeah.
So
funny's funny.
Well, funny for you
at any degree.
Yeah, funny for you is, I mean, everybody's funny then.
To someone else,
right,
maybe.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But so I like both.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Oh, it didn't even break. We're good.
Uh-oh.
That leads me to another thing. So here.
Jesus. Don't break shit.
I'm gonna break shit.
Give me something to break.
So
your fucking face. That is fun, actually.
It's not a challenge, but it is a challenge.
Challenge? I don't know what it is, so I'm not going to accept yet.
Well, you don't have to accept yet, but it's from Mr. Corey Bayman.
Oh, fuck. Great.
Mr. Corey Bayman said he would kiss you on the mouth.
Okay.
If you took another shot of this.
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Not even for a open mouth kiss from Corey.
No, first of all, I don't want that.
The kiss or that?
I don't want the kiss. Here's what I would tell Corey.
That's a little insulting.
I don't need the kiss. If he can prove to me that he has watched 10 episodes from beginning to end,
yeah,
I will take a shot of that.
Oh, and save his kiss for...
You can save your kiss. Save it for your wife. She's far more beautiful than I am. So,
well, maybe he just wanted a little beard action.
They all do. They all do.
And Tim does not have a beard.
Well, I would hope not, but she is his beard. If he's offering me open mouth kisses.
She is his beard.
So
That's for sure.
I mean, let's face it. Why would he offer me an open mouth? Does he think I think he's hot?
No, he just
he thinks I want to make out with him.
He thinks everyone wants to make out with him. All right.
You're trying to get me to do something I already fucking hated.
I told him you hated it. That's why you kind of.
He's not Mark. Like Mark's like a little hottie, you know, like
Mark. So if Mark gave you an open mouth kiss, would you do a shot?
How about if Joel gave me the open mouth kiss?
Okay. I'll have to talk him into it.
No, we'll get beat up.
How about all three of them?
We will get beat up for that. I watched Joel lose his shit during a basketball game for one of his own teammates smacking him on the ass. I thought there was going to be a fight. It was the funniest thing ever.
Joel's come a long way.
No, he hasn't.
He's come a long way. He's not.
No, he hasn't.
He hasn't there, but he has come a long way.
Can you smack him on the ass yet?
I think so.
Oh, really? Open the tavern.
I think I can.
No, I don't want an open mouth kiss from Corey. I want Corey.
You heard it here. I tried, buddy.
I want Corey to watch our fucking podcast. How does he even know we drank that? You told him. He didn't watch the episode and see we drank it.
He knew that.
No, he didn't.
That episode.
Okay, that's my point. So here, I can say it without having to worry about it. Corey. Corey? Is that your name? Corey? Corey, right?
Has it ever been anything else?
Oh, I forgot who we're talking about already. That's how important he is. To me, in the ethos of this podcast.
Wow.
So, Corey and Steven from Sunnyside Cafe. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, just making friends out right away off on this as we started off. And all you friends, you can leave a comment about Tingala and Steven.
What is it called?
Tingala?
I think you just said Tingala. Tingala. I think it's Tingala. That's what it makes you do.
Yeah, well, it does. That's what he just likes to see the reaction. That's all I wanted to see, the reaction.
Tell him to watch the first one.
Yeah, he wants it.
Well, now I'm ready for it. Like, it's not going to be as bad this time around. I'm ready for it now. I know it's disgusting.
It is.
Last time I had a little bit of, maybe it's actually going to taste good.
I think that was the thing. I said he didn't have a whole lot, so this would be like a full shot.
Well, no.
And I think that's how it kind of came up. But anyways, leave a comment. On Instagram, on Facebook, on X. Please come follow on YouTube. And just, come on, Steven. Let's see if you got what you got, buddy. Leave a comment.
Don't fuck with my Steven.
Well?
You fucking pervert.
What if Steven wants to give you an open mouth kiss for taking a drink?
I don't think Steven's that kind of pervert.
No? He did, he's a different kind of pervert?
He did talk about my, I think he just called it a fat, juicy cock. So.
Oh.
Well, we went in for breakfast, and I said, told him.
You just showed him?
No, I didn't show him. I told him that the woman was paying, and he's like, you must have that big, fat, juicy cock, huh? And I'm like, goddamn right. So then the next morning, we come in, and he had told the whole restaurant about it, and we come walking, and everybody's like, there's a guy with a big cock. Yeah.
God. You lied to everybody you work with.
Right? That's okay, though.
I mean, you're right.
I am very popular.
It's a good lie.
At Sunnyside Cafe.
Obviously. And all
with the
ladies. All the chefs in the back, and the waitresses were goggling over you because they're like, ooh.
But you want a good breakfast. We talk about breakfast a lot around here.
We do. I
love breakfast.
We go.
They had cinnamon butter French toast. So good. So good. Mm. Bacon. So good.
Mm. Sunnyside Cafe.
Sunnyside Cafe, Black River Falls, Wisconsin.
Boom. There you go.
And it was funny because we were trying to find a different restaurant. And we missed it. And then I was like, look down that road. There's a little cafe. Let's go there. And that's how you find the best places.
And that's how you find Steven.
Steven.
Making friends all over the country.
I got enough friends. I don't have room for more friends.
No?
No.
Is Steven in or out? Did you have more friends? Or did he put you at the limit?
Well, I told Steven if I owned a cafe in this area or a restaurant in this area, I would hire him away because he is exactly what you want. As your, you know, the face of your restaurant, because he's very entertaining.
Yeah, but that's an employee. He's not a friend.
Oh, no. I don't have room for friends. Sorry.
So your friend limit has been met before, Steven.
Yeah, I got you. That's it. That's all I got room for. I mean, if you want to quit, then we're.
Then make room for Steven.
Yeah, then I got room. So
okay.
Depends if you want the job or not. I don't think I can handle more than one friend at a time.
Does he need to submit an application?
Yeah. Yep. Submit to our post office box.
You could submit that in a comment box down below.
There you go. Yeah.
In Instagram, Facebook.
I would like it if Sir Steven was watching. Just leave a comment. Let me know you saw this.
Yeah, that's all you got to do. Okay. Corey, too. Corey, leave a comment. What do you think of this? What do you think about that? He didn't even want a kiss from you. I don't get it. I don't understand it, but whatever.
I don't. It's just lost on me how anybody thought that was going to be the, like, come up with a better offer. Can I kiss your wife?
Like, he would tell you, he'd probably say, yeah, go ahead.
I don't think my wife would be very happy about that, but that's all right. That's all right. You got to, you know.
Somewhere, now this is way back in the drinking days, I actually got his wife.
Don't tell the whole world this.
No?
I don't know. I think so.
Man, no.
Maybe I don't.
No, I'm nervous.
Maybe I don't. Does it have anything to do with...
Yep.
Okay.
So leave a comment.
We already said that.
Instagram, Facebook. We want to find us on TikTok, X, and YouTube. And we give a good listen. If you're just driving around in the car and you can't watch, you shouldn't be watching when you do. But, you know, go to Spotify and just throw that bad boy on. We will entertain you for hours.
Yeah, and I found we're definitely not going to lie to you. We're on a push to push the audio a little bit.
Push.
But I have found that I kind of like just listening to us. You don't have to look at our ugly faces.
Look at that. A whole new way you can.
We're less awkward and, I don't know, we're better audio.
So you almost say we have a face for radio.
Yeah. So if you've watched the video and you were like, I'm never doing that again, you can just listen to audio.
Just listen.
We have great guests. Speaking of which.
Well, we do not want to keep a pretty lady waiting.
All right. So without further ado, Donna Lee.
Comedy from Donna Lee.
Thank you for joining us, Donna Lee.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We saw you for the first time on Kill Tony. We're big Kill Tony fans, and you had a great minute and a fun interview on Kill Tony. And we love talking to the comedians from down in that area because it seems like such a cool group of comedians that all kind of support each other and stuff. So we really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you. That was such a bizarre, strange experience.
Yeah. So how do you even prepare it? Going up on there, because you've been watching it prior to it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you think you're prepared, you know, you have the minute, and I've been practicing it forever and ever in my car, like, you know, ready to go, because it's actually a longer joke that I do that's about 90 seconds, and so okay. I whittled it down, but I knew that was the one, and I still bombed anyway, but that's what happened. But the experience is bizarre. So you're in a holding room with 250 other comedians. And
yeah, still crazy.
It's crazy. And it's called Shakespeare. It's this massive warehouse room and the air conditioner doesn't work. So we're all just sweating balls in there waiting. And then you never know, of course, when you're going to get called. There's only seven or so comics that get called. So, but I had manifested that because I knew I was going to get called that night. Like,
oh, nice.
I visualized it. I knew exactly what was going to happen. I saw my name being called. I'm with a friend named Kimberly and then a friend, Ernest. And I saw them at the bar in my head all day. And I remember seeing in my head passing my friend Ernest and telling him to text my husband because they're friends to let him know that I'd been called because you have to put your phone away. But then they rush you into the mothership from the back.
Yeah.
And they take you through a back alley. So it's very scary. You're on 6th Street, Dirty Six. And
Dirty Six.
It was raining. It was just this crazy time. So one of the producers ushers me with an umbrella and runs me down a back alley. And all of a sudden I'm in the back of the mothership and the guy standing there at the stage is like, hey, the weather's been crazy. And I'm thinking, I'm about to go on stage and you want to talk about the weather. And I'm
just making small talk.
Yes, totally. And I was too nice to go, dude, I need a minute. I'm freaking out. So I was like, yeah, the weather, it's crazy. And I thought, I need him to stop talking to me. And he didn't. He just wouldn't. He was so sweet, and I'm glad he talked to me. But then one comic came out, and then they said, now you. And I went, me? And they went, you. And I was like, me?
Are you sure?
They can go next.
It's crazy. And so then they open the little curtain area, and you're all of a sudden you're on the stage with Kill Tony. And it's just, it's like nothing I can explain to you. I don't remember a minute of it. I was completely sober. And for 2 weeks, you know, you have to wait for 2 weeks for the show to come out.
Yeah.
But I told everybody I didn't know what happened. I don't know what's going on. I remember them talking about my anatomy, and that's all I remember.
Yeah. Yep, they made sure they brought that up.
Yeah, Giannis definitely did not hold back. That was just straight to it. And
yep.
It was nuts, but I think it ended really well, in my opinion. I they let me talk, you know, about my comeback story, which I thought they found interesting. So yeah, that was cool. It was,
yeah, the interview can make or break you, and you that
absolutely
you, that you killed it on the interview for sure.
Yeah, thank you, it was humbling and cool that I came back to comedy. I'm glad it happened then, because it had it happened a year prior, I wouldn't have been ready when I came back into comedy a year prior, because sure, I didn't have like a good website, I didn't have all the experience yet, and you know, I just would have been a disaster. So sure, I'm glad that I got on when I did. And then the funniest part is that my friend Kimberly Kester, she got on 2 weeks before. She yeah, said all of a sudden after you're done, they shove you into the back alley by yourself. And I was like, what? So sure enough, it's raining, I'm done, and I come down, and the photographer, who's the famous photographer for the area, Troy Conrad, he says, let me take a picture. He takes my picture as I'm coming down the stairs, and I don't remember any of that, too. And then they open the door, and they push me into the alley in the rain with my big book. And I'm like, I don't have an umbrella, and I'm thinking, this big book is leather, I don't want it to get wet. So I'm like trying to hide it.
no usher with an umbrella when you're on your way out. They're like, yeah, when you're done,
you're good. And so then I looked at the door guy who's closing the door. I said, where do I go? And he goes, where do you want to go? And I went, I don't know where I came from.
The green room, maybe? Can I just go up to the green room and hang out? Like, where do you think I want to go?
It was nuts. So he's like, well, where'd you come from? And I was like, I came from Shakespeare's. And he goes, well, I guess it's that way. But there's no signs or door, you know, door markings. It's just a whole bunch of doors down an alley. So I'm standing. I'll never forget this for the rest of my life. I was standing in the rain with my big book, and I was laughing. And I was like, I was just on Kill Tony.
Right. And now
you're standing by yourself.
That's now awesome. I'm in an alley.
Yeah. Now I'm in an alley fighting off homeless people on Dirty Six. Yeah,
worried about getting murdered, but
that's, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Kimberly Kester, because we just did an episode with her as well. So her episode will be coming out in a few weeks.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, she's so sweet. She's one of my good friends here in Austin
yeah,
now.
Yeah, she's hilarious. So yeah. So you mentioned the comeback. So let's go back to the beginning of the story. When did you actually start comedy for the first time?
The first time was in 2006. And okay, I had just started doing open mic nights. I'd been on stage maybe 4 or 5 times. And I was awful. But without being too graphic, I had just had an upper body improvement. And I was wearing a really tight shirt.
We're not Nick at Night. We can yeah, we can talk about anything you want.
Well, I'm you know, I'm pretty clean, so I don't want anything to ever come back on me and go talk dirty on that one show.
Right.
But I took a video, and it was at Cap City Comedy doing open mic, and I sent that video to Nick at Night because they were promoting a Funniest Mom in America contest. Are you a comedian and a mom and blah blah blah? So I sent in my video, and literally like a video. And, you know, I had to like tape it and everything and put it in the mail and, you know, lick the stamp. Uh-huh.
Nice.
But then I got a call one night, like about a week later, from the producer of Nick at Night, Search for the Funniest Mom in America. His name is Jeff. And Jeff said, hey, this is Jeff. I'm the producer of the show. We just wanted to let you know we got your video. And I was like, oh, cool. Thanks. And he said, so anyway, there's 20 semifinalists and we have all 20. And I was like, cool. And I thought, why is this guy calling me to ruin my day? Like,
right. Thanks.
You were admit so close.
Yeah. Good job. So anyway, I just was like, okay, cool. Thanks. And I was really confused. And he goes, well, we opened up a 21st spot for you. And I was like, what? Oh. And I freaked out. It was very exciting. So then I got to go to LA and try out for the show. And it was still terrible. I have the videos. They're awful. But they're funny to watch. And so then they went from 21 down to 10 to make the finals to go to New York and shoot the reality show. So I was on the reality show and got to meet like Jeff Ross and Tim Meadows and all these really cool
people. Oh, nice.
And Katie Sagal, which I was like, Katie Sagal, how cool was it meeting Katie? I love Katie Sagal. So
she's just as adorable as you think she is. She was so sweet. She was our house mom. So that's just awesome. Like any reality show, it looked like she lived with us for a few weeks when we saw her like 5 minutes every other day. Like,
right.
But she was great. So we stayed in a penthouse in New York, and the way I got kicked off was just epic. A lot of it wasn't on TV, but it's all caught somewhere. But it got to where I was going up against another comedian, and one of us is going to get kicked off. So we had to do like a comedy contest. So
sure,
we did our bits, you know, a few minutes. And then Katie Sagal says, well, Donnelly, I'm so sorry, but you've lost this round. It's time for you to go home. And I was like, thanks, Katie Sagal. And so I leave, and there's always a little production assistant with each one of us because of liability. So somebody was always with us. And then there was like a room downstairs at this comedy club where all the production people were, and they were like videotaping. There was like 8 guys with headphones on, and they're doing stuff. And so I go to the downstairs and with my little production assistant, and I was just mortified because my intent was to get divorced, and I had no money, and I wanted to win the money to get the divorce.
Oh.
Yeah. So
goals. And then they opened the door. You were in an alley and it was raining.
Now I'm 6th Street. So then I come out and I had to go to the bathroom, and they were like sending me home right away. And I thought, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Cause my husband at the time, my husband that I have now is incredibly supportive, but my ex-husband was going to be, I told you so. And it was going to be a nightmare. Mm. And I knew we were going to have a fight. So I thought, wow, I just blew up everything and I didn't win. And now I'm going home penniless. So I said, I have to go to the bathroom. And she said, okay, I'll go with you, the assistant. And I said, no, honey, I have to go to the bathroom alone. So I went to the bathroom and I shut the door and I just started sobbing. I just started crying. And I slid down the wall, did the ugly Oprah cry. I was just like, ah. And then I kind of washed my face off for a little bit. And I remember saying, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? And I'm just holding my face and I'm sobbing. And I thought, okay, I need to get it together because I got to go home. So then I went to the sink and I tried to straighten up. And I come out as fresh as I could. And the little production assistant said, Donna Lee, your microphone was on.
Oh, that classic. Yes.
Yes. So then I turn and I look in the production room and all the guys, I've become friends with everybody on the show, you know, all the production people. And I was like the mom of the show. Like everybody had a role. Like there was the bitch. There was the, you know, one, and there was all the, I was everybody's mom. So I look over and they're all crying too. So I was hugging them and trying to make them feel better. And when the producer came in, I'll never forget his Brendan. He came in, he's like 6'5". He came in and he said, hey, Donnelly, you have to go back out there again. Katie Sagal messed up something. You have to pretend like you didn't lose.
Now you got to show how you can act. Oh, no.
No.
So a lot of my makeup was off because I'd washed my face for the most part. And I was wearing a white shirt, so I had makeup on my shirt from the water. And I hadn't cussed at all. And I looked at the producer and I went, F you, Brendan. There's no way I'm going back out there. And he goes, well, you have a contract you signed. You're going back out there. And I went, oh, my God. So I went back out onto the stage up high above the audience. And the girl in the front row goes, oh, my God, she's been crying.
It gets worse. It just keeps getting worse.
It got worse.
And now you got a smile.
That's right. And then, then I left, but I get to use that credit. I still use it to this day when I have a show. People are like, you know, producers like, how do you want to be introduced? Funniest Mom in America? I'm like, no, I was a finalist on the Funniest Mom in America.
So, I'm curious, to any of the women that you were in the house with, did any of them still do comedy?
One of them did. The one who won, her name's Ruby. She does comedy in L.A. Okay. But you know what's really interesting is that I did season 2. Season 1, Leanne Morgan was on.
Yeah. She definitely still does comedy.
Yeah. Yep.
She definitely does comedy, right? She didn't win season 1, and I didn't win season 2. So we're both, I think, losers of the same show, and we should both, you know. And I've opened for her several times. She's amazing. She was really great.
Wow, I didn't realize she didn't win the first season. When I heard she was on, I just assumed she won the first season. Who won the first season?
I don't know the lady's name. Isn't that
nobody remembers.
Yeah, nobody remembers first place.
Right? Oh, gosh, yeah. I should know. But, yeah, no, it's been, I mean, interesting. So to answer your question, I worked for about 5 years as an opener. I became really good opening for Leanne, featuring for her, too. I opened for Joe Coy a couple of times, D.L. Hughley, Carlos Mencia, a lot of really cool comedians. And then I thought, wow, my job's really stressful, and I've got my child and stepsons and a new marriage, and so I decided to take some time off. So when I came back in May of 2024, I was sad about it for 12 years. I didn't think I was ever going to come back.
Sure.
Now I'm back and I'm busier than I ever thought I'd be. So it's been great.
So that's two different things, right? The first time you go on, you know, what got you into that push to go back to go on the first time, 2006, and then just missing it, you went back?
Yeah, I missed it all along. I did one show a year for 12 years. Like I would do a fundraiser or somebody would call and say, hey, we have this comedy or anything we're doing. So, but one show a year doesn't get you very far.
Right. That doesn't improve the skills very quickly, does it?
Does not. And it was every show that I did, I would videotape and I couldn't even watch it. I knew it was awful. So I've probably done 80, 85 shows in the last year and 2 months. So
okay.
Had lots
of experience. Really grinding.
Yeah, I'm really in it, and it's just been amazing. I've met the most amazing comedians. I was just telling a really big national touring comedian the other day. We had lunch, and she said, "How's the environment when you go down to do Kill Tony?" And I said, "You would not believe how engaging and supportive and kind everybody is to every single comedian. When a comedian's name gets pulled from the bucket in Shakespeare in the holding room, we all jump up for that comedian. We are all yelling and screaming, you got this, you can do this. And then they have to walk through all of us to get to the mothership, you know, with a production person. And we are high-fiving this person. Everybody's patting that person on the back. Just, you know, it's so incredibly positive that I didn't expect that. I thought it'd be a bunch of, you know, out for themselves kind of comedians going, yeah, whatever, I should have been called. But it's not. And then when I came back from doing Kill Tony, I came back into the room, I held the big book up and everybody busted out cheering. And then I said, I've made it onto the secret show, and everybody started cheering again.
That's awesome. I'm going to go back a little bit because you said that you bombed your minute. I don't think you bombed your minute. I thought you were funny. So, and you got invited to the secret show, which I know is kind of, you know, Red Band does invite all the hot women onto the secret show. So, but you were legitimately funny too. So,
thank you. Well, the first minute I didn't get any laughs at all because they like you said, then they immediately went into my anatomy, which is fine because I was like that. The joke didn't land the way I wanted it to. And I was praying to God somebody would say something, and they did. And then it took off. And then when they let me do the second joke, I knew I was not going to bomb that one. That's my favorite joke of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. You do use your mom a lot.
I do. And I always will. She's very funny. I do a lot of humor about my husband and my kids and, you know, my pets and all that. But
sort of goes back to funny's funny and your mom's funny.
My mom's funny. Asian people are funny. I mean, you know.
Does your mom like it? Does she? I mean, she obviously knows you tell these jokes. Does she like it?
You know, my mom, I don't deal with things very well. My mom had passed away maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
But in my act, she's still alive.
Yeah.
And it kind of helps me cope with things, I think. I'm the kind of person to stick my head in the sand and not deal with stuff. So she's just alive and well. When she was alive, though, she didn't understand comedy. She didn't understand what I was doing. And she didn't hate it, but she didn't like it. Like, she didn't really have, she wasn't thrilled about it because, like, she knew it didn't make any money. But a really good story is that I took her, she loves gambling. So Leanne Morgan had me come feature for her in a casino the first time I did comedy. And I knew that was going to be a killer show. You know, Leanne's going to be incredible. The audience is going to be fire. So I said to my mom, "Mom, you're going to go with me and you're going to get to gamble, but I want you to come see my show so you understand what I do in front of a really big audience of like 600 people. And she's like, "Okay, Mama, we go gamble." She was all excited. We're going to go gamble. And so I took her in the room and I sat her in the very front. There's like big giant round tables. And Leanne told me, she said, "I don't know if you've never done a casino show. The casino shows never, ever, ever fill up until the minute the show starts. So it'll be empty. But don't worry. Because as soon as it starts, all of a sudden, like magic, it'll be full." And I was like, that's weird. And sure enough, the minute the show started, it went from like 30, 40 people to 600. Like, all of a sudden,
everybody's gambling until the last minute. They're on their last hand. Just, I'm going to hit one. I'm going to hit one. Okay, we got to go.
One more.
So my mom's sitting in the front row. I start to do my set. And it's a huge stage, really tall stage. I'm looking at all these people. And very quietly, my mom gets up. And she's literally in the front row, front table. She gets up and just walks out. And I'm standing there like this going, I didn't know, and it messed up, you know, it messed with me, it messed with my set, and I thought, oh my God. So then I found her after the show ended, and it wasn't my best show, and I was super bummed, and I was like, what in the world? All I could think about was my mom just walked out on me, and I made a comment.
Your own mom.
Yes. So, but I made a funny comment as she was leaving, I said, there goes my mom, y'all, and everybody started laughing. And so I found her at a slot machine after the show, 90 minutes later. And I said, "Mom, what are you doing?" I was so angry and hurt. And she looked at me very nonchalant. She's at the slot machine. She goes, "Mama, I not know what you say. I get Betty Bowles, so I leap."
You got to love that energy, though. Like, I'm not having fun. I'm going to go back to what I came here for. I don't care that it's you. I'm out of here.
That's right. Asian people, man.
I heard some bells. I need to go look.
That's awesome. Your mom sounds like she was a lot of fun.
He was very funny, very slept.
A lot to handle.
Yeah, a lot to handle for sure. Yeah. My dad was the opposite. He was very quiet and very, very cerebral. And they were very, very opposite people. So I think that's what gave me a lot of push in my comedy to kind of, you know, talk about my family.
Yeah.
So yeah. So your parent, was your dad supportive of the comedy? I mean, your mom just didn't care or didn't know. She didn't know.
Yeah. No, my dad didn't really. It wasn't his jam. He's a physician, very successful, so he wasn't thrilled about it. They came to one of my shows, and I have a whole bit that I wrote about it that it was hilarious because they were both like, what is our daughter doing right now? She has a college degree that she's not using. She married a very wealthy man who she divorced, and now she's doing comedy.
Where did we go wrong? What's going on?
Exactly. But they were unsupportive, or they weren't supportive. So, you know,
All right.
Yeah. As long as it's not anti, I mean, you can take neutral. You just don't want like negative, right? Like that's where
I'll take neutral. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You went to college and you kind of went for jazz.
Yeah. I
improvised. So
jazz improv. I played saxophone. So I played saxophone from grade school all the way through high school into college. And I wanted to be the world's best jingle writer because I wanted to get an advertising major and a minor in music. And that didn't work out. I thought, they don't make any money.
I'll go into comedy.
Yeah, I'll be a comedian. They do.
I'll be a comedian. Make absolutely $0. But I ended up going into pharmaceutical sales. So I had a path and did really well there.
So do you still play the saxophone?
I do ish. I got it out and I'm writing a whole thing about it. I'm going to actually do it on stage soon, I think. I mean, took 12 years.
You kind of told the whole world you do on Kill Tony right. When you were talking to Carlos.
That's true.
Everybody assumes you do.
I haven't picked it up in a long time, but I picked it up maybe, I don't know, a year ago or so. My husband was laughing because 12 years of intense practicing, like sometimes 3-4 hours a day, my lip would be bloody from biting into the reed and the mouthpiece. Wow. And it was intense. And college was no joke. The hardest thing I've ever done is play jazz improv, which is very similar to comedy because you're following your music on a sheet of paper, right? And then you have to play all the extra notes in your head that aren't on the sheet of paper. And in comedy, you have a set you're going to go by, but now you have to read the room. You have to figure out why that guy's leaving and why is that lady talking and, you know, why isn't this person laughing and that person looks offended. Like you're, you know, going through all the things while you're still saying the words that are supposed to come out of your mouth. So I guess I had practice learning jazz improv, how to handle myself. Not that I'm, you know, the best ever after getting back in a year, but I'm trying. But back to the saxophone thing, after 12 years of incredibly intense saxophone training, the only thing I can remember how to play is the solo to Careless Whisper.
I don't think you need any more.
That's a great start, right?
Right? But I play it really well. So.
There you go. So
you could join a Wham cover band.
That's right, with the one song.
Yeah. So are you writing Careless Whisper into your comedy act? Or are you going to have to learn something else?
I don't know. What do you guys think? I thought it'd be funny to, you know, have the saxophone hiding on stage somewhere. Because if I bring it out, people are going to just stare at it the whole time. True. To try to figure out, you know, and set up the whole story that I was on Kill Tony. I talked about playing saxophone. And by the way, I've trained for 12 years, intense training. My entire life was playing saxophone. And then I didn't play it for many years. But I can play one song. Do y'all want to hear it? And then bring it
out. See if they'll be able to guess it. I would think most people would.
I think so. I think it'd be really funny.
Yes. Yes. And then be like,
all
there you
guys
go.
Know what happened.
12 years paid off.
Right? Ironically, the very first time I played Careless Whisper was in high school in the jazz band. And the auditorium was full of all the school kids. And we practiced the song 100 times and I was the lead saxophonist. So I stood up to play the solo and the entire auditorium went crazy because it was the number one song on the radio. And so I remember that feeling like it was yesterday. I remember thinking, oh my God, this is what it feels like to be famous. I was so excited and I'll never forget that. And I was kind of bullied and pushed around in school because I was a half, you know, ethnic band nerd. And I was in a small country town, and, you know, there was a hard upbringing. But that one moment, I remember nobody judged me or bullied me, and it was the coolest moment of my entire school career because I remember being the most badass human being ever.
Nice. Well, that explains the desire to do comedy, right? You want to get up there and get that cheer again one more time. I want to feel that high again.
You're always chasing it. I'm sure the other comedians on your show said the same thing. You're always chasing for that sure. high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, getting that laugh, that really is a hell of a high, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That Kill Tony thing, like after it finally aired, normally you go back as a comedian back to Shakespeare's and you get to watch it live, but it's really the 2 week prior. But you get to watch it with all the other comedians. Well, the Monday that mine aired, Tony and team were off to London.
No.
And so everybody couldn't watch it live at Shakespeare. So I watched it at home, and I told my husband too for 2 weeks. I was like, you're not going to be happy about this. Like it was not pleasant. But I couldn't remember the details. It wasn't near as bad as I thought it was, but we watched it and we laughed, and I was so proud of it. And I was just so happy to let me talk about my comeback story. And I think that I kind of won over the audience, and it was great. It was fun.
I think so. You did for sure.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And I think one of the funniest things you did afterwards is don't ever read the comments, but you read the comments. And then you, before anything else good, said, here are my top five bad comments, and just embrace it. That was perfect.
Oh, thanks. You know, I love mean tweets on Jimmy Kimmel, and I thought this might be the only time I ever get this experience.
I know. I love negative. We don't get anything but negative comments, but I love them. I think I got called like a lesbian with a beard one time or something. Somebody, I was like, it's just great. I love it.
Oh no, that's crazy. People are nuts. A lot of people read the comments, especially the Reddit comments, and everybody, they weren't just blowing smoke up my booty, but I didn't find as many negative comments as I thought I was going to find. I found a bunch, but I thought they were going to go in hard because of the, you know, Kill Tony talk about my breasts, and I thought it was just going to be nuts. And for the most part, 99% of the comments I got and direct messages I got were absolutely incredibly kind and inspiring and motivational. I mean, it was the most incredible flood of positivity I've ever had.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It was really sweet. It was especially from moms or parents that, you know, hadn't chased their dreams, or they were just proud to see somebody doing it. So it was really, it was fun. So,
it's a great story.
So what got you into comedy the first time around? What kind of comedians were you into when you got into comedy the first time around? What made you decide you wanted to do it?
Oh, it's kind of a long, sad, tragic story. I'll try to condense. When I was in the fifth grade, my best friend, Mary Margaret Schrader, said at the slide, you're so funny, you should be a comedian. And she's smarter than I was. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but yes. And so I remember thinking, whatever she said, I want to be that person, because I liked making people laugh even at that age. And then all through school, I was the class clowny kind of person, a band person, trying to be the funny, nerdy, overweight high school geek girl. And then I thought, I'm going to be a comedian. I want to be, you know, that's my goal in life. And then I fast forward to having a child. I had really, really awful postpartum depression. And I thought, I might not make it out of this. It was so bad. Oh. And it was strange because I sold Celexa as a pharmaceutical sales rep, and I couldn't identify that I had this depression.
Oh, wow.
You don't see it in yourself sometimes. You see it in other people.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I went to a couple of doctors, and they were like, you're just stressed. You aren't not sleeping. And I'm like, y'all are doctors. Like, what does that mean? And so I finally went to a friend who's a doctor, and he said, I think you're depressed and you need to get on the medication that you sell. I was like, cool. I'd rather that than hurting myself. So I started taking Celexa, and then I came out of that dark place, and I thought, it was so dark that I thought, thank God I came back, because I didn't know if I was going to make it back. And all I could think of is I need to take care of this child. Like, I have to be here for him. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I get out of this, I'm going to do everything I ever wanted to do. And the very first thing was stand-up comedy. And then I made a decision to go to open mic at Cap City Comedy in Austin. And that's when I ended up on the show. So that kind of, you know, it was a really cool progression. Yeah. And I just loved every comedian I worked with. Like, I didn't set out to be a clean comedian, because I'm a fairly dirty person at home. I say the F word a lot. if you've ever seen my scare videos, if you haven't, they're hilarious, because every time my husband scares me, I scream.
Oh, I loved it.
Yes.
Yes, I've seen some. They're fucking hilarious. Yes. Every time it's fuck Michael. Fuck.
I know.
I'll say the F word for you.
Right? Yeah, Michael's becoming more famous than I am. I mean, online, people are like, is that the Michael that scares you and makes you say the F word? Like, yes, that's him. But yeah, so I had to be clean, though, for Nick at Night because it was a Nickelodeon-owned show. And I thought, and there was all the other comedians weren't technically clean comedians, and they had to be clean. And it was hard because if you're not a clean comedian, becoming clean is really difficult, but you can do it the other way. Like,
yeah,
I can be a little dirtier if I need to, but I'll never drop an F-bomb on stage. I'll never say super dirty words. And that came from my son. His name's Sterling. And I always swore when he was little that he will never find anything on the internet that embarrasses him about me.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, and I got his permission to come back. Like, I had to sit down with him and I said, hey, I'm thinking about getting back into comedy. And he, with his Southern accent, said, Mother, I think that's a real good idea. I know you love that.
Like, cool. We're not going to be able to say the same thing. We've embarrassed our kids badly on
it. We've done it more,
yeah,
more times than we can count. They know now just not to watch.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah. They're like, no, Dad. No.
Yeah.
They can watch the episodes with guests. We don't. Yeah.
I mean, I embarrass them out in public.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so why not?
That's mandatory. I love that.
Right.
Absolutely.
50% of the reason we have kids is to be able to embarrass them in public, right? I think, yeah.
Well, if you're able to hold your swearing, being Irish or half Irish, that's impressive.
Right.
I thought because so. That's just built into our, I'm very Irish, and that's just built into our blood.
It's
along with drinking.
Yeah.
As you could tell.
Right. That's funny. Yeah. No,
do you
my
have a
mom
drink of choice?
I'm an old fashioned person. Yeah.
All right. Nice.
Old-fashioned. I'll have one when we're done here and go to bed, and that's my little drink for the day.
Nice. We're in Wisconsin, so we are very well versed in the old-fashioned. We drink a lot of them up here. Yeah,
love it. I love y'all's setup. The whole podcast is so much fun. I've listened to a few lately, so thanks for putting on a good show.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. We love, like I said, we love talking comedy, so it's cool to have that. See, every time somebody on Kill Tony hits, we'll contact pretty quickly, and mm-hmm. You know. So we've had quite a run of Kill Tony comedians on. So,
oh, I love that. That's so cool. Yeah, thank
you
for supporting.
It's such a good format.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate all the support for sure. And Austin's such a hotbed for comedy. Like, it's the comedy mecca of the world right now.
Oh, it's getting huge.
Yeah.
We always say we're going to come down and visit and just go to all the clubs.
You should. If you come down, come on a Monday, and Kimberly and I'll take you to Kill Tony, and you can just hang out in the space. It's just so much fun. The energy's, you know, cool.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, it's just fun.
It's an open bar to the public too. And people, it's funny to watch people come in that aren't comics and they don't have the wristband on. And they're like, what's happening here? And then we get to explain what's going on and they're like, what?
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. I thought you guys were in a private area. I didn't realize it was an open to the public area.
Yeah. It's a big giant bar, like a warehouse bar upstairs. And then there's a downstairs area where there's the public comes in off of 6th Street. But yeah, people, like last week I was there and I overheard some guy from Europe. He's like, I'm here from Europe on a business trip. What is this? And one of the other comedians jumped up and explained the entire thing from beginning to end about what was going on. And the guy was like, wow. He was just so interested.
Had to be a dude who did that, right? Mansplained the shit out of it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I turned around. I knew the guy too. I was laughing. I was like, he's a very good explainer. But yeah. He had lots of words.
So do you find yourself going every Monday or just?
No. Kimberly's my hero. She went like 12 weeks in a row or something crazy. Right. I went, that time I made it to Kill Tony was my fourth time. And I'm trying to go like once a month. It's a commitment. When you go down as a comedian, you sign up for Kill Tony and open mic. Kill Tony sign up is at 6. And you're there in the same space until Kill Tony or Tony Hinchcliffe decides the show is over at 11:30 midnight.
Yeah.
And so you're just there. Just hang out. But you make a whole bunch of friends and all the comedians are, you know, they're fantastic. And they're also different and fun and quirky and weird. And I just love it. It's just great.
So during that time, do you ever like network or get gigs out of it by learning open other things? Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I've met so many comics and then I've gotten so many gigs just, you know, meeting that many more comics. There are a lot of them produce shows. I produce one show twice a month here in Austin called Satire Saturdays with my friend Ernest Evans Sr., who was also on Kill Tony. I bet he'd be a great guest if you haven't had him already.
Name sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's great. He did really well on his Kill Tony. I think it was episode like 682 or something. But Yeah, he and I produce a show together. He produces a bunch of shows in Austin. But yeah, I met so many great comics, and they all have us, you know, their side gig shows. And even though I'm, you know, a lot older than they are and a lot cleaner, it's just, it works out so well. Like, I think people like Kimberly and I had stepped into this scene at the right time, because all the guys are great and they're looking for more new comedians to do shows. And I have no end of shows, and I love it. I'm the happiest I've been professionally ever. It's just
That's so good to hear.
It's great. And it's great to give them a variety, right? I mean, you keep pushing the cleanish part, which is rare, I think, these days for a comedian.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with Matt Bargatze and that whole clean comedy stream, you know, that's getting, it's getting really popular. I do talk about dirty things, but in a clean way. So I can, you know, take that out if I have to, but.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's got to be hard to do that. How do you decide how to make the dirty clean?
I talk a lot, like one of my jokes, I do say the word dick, but it's an anatomy thing. But I talk about my poor husband who doesn't get any sex. So he, you know, he declares it's dick day. And so I say dick day, and it's kind of shocking, but I say it over and over and over. But then I created this door hanger that says dick day on one side, but the other side says nope. And so one side is the guy and one side is the girl. And so everybody after one of my shows wants one of these door hangers because they're free, but they're just really funny and everybody can relate.
Yep.
To some degree. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So everybody's wife wants to the nope side. And the guys are always really smart too. They're like, can I have two so I can glue them together? And they just both sides. And I'm like, yeah. Yes, you can.
You should be able to we should have two, and we should be able to override it like once a week or something like that. You know, we get a freebie. We can.
Yeah, but if the husband gets to override once a week, the girl gets to override at least six times a week.
Several times for sure. That's funny. Yeah.
Wait, can I put it up twice a day? Is that?
My husband has on all the doors and they still don't work.
Oh, yeah.
Still not happening. I went through menopause. That's
pretty good. So is that part of your merch?
Yeah, I have t-shirts too. The men's t-shirt, of course, is Dick Day at Donnelly Comedy. And then the woman's t-shirt says, nope.
I should get those for me and my wife.
Yeah, yeah. I did not see that. On your website, I'm assuming? I did not see that.
I'm about to put it up. The one t-shirt I have, I do a joke about love languages, and my husband's love languages are physical touch and words of affirmation, and then my love languages are don't touch me, don't talk to me. So I have a t-shirt that says don't touch me, don't talk to me at Donnelly Comedy. So that's the one t-shirt I have on my website, but I'm going to put the others up after I get a couple more headlining gigs and get the word out there. So
I would like that shirt too, because I don't like when people talk to me, so that's for sure. This is the only time I ever talk to people is for the podcast. So otherwise, if I went to Shakespeare's, I would just stand at the bar by myself and watch everything going on. So he's the social one.
I'm going to send you an instant message after this and get y'all's address. I'm going to send you some Dick Day t-shirts.
We will wear them on the podcast. You bet.
Awesome. And then I'll also send your wife some t-shirts so it's fair. There
you go. She's not outnumbered. Yeah.
And we'll be doing the same. We'll always reach out after, and we'll send a tank top to you.
Oh, cool. That'd be fun. I love
it. So you're doing the some of the Moms Unhinged shows, huh?
Yeah, they're so fun. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
The last one Kimberly and I did together is 420 people, sold out auditorium. This group's great. It's momsunhinged.com, and they're all over the place. And the woman who runs it, her name's Andrea, and she's just a marketing genius. So she's figured out the sweet spot of 200 to 600 people auditoriums. And she does Facebook ads. And, you know, when I worked with Leanne Morgan, one of the most interesting and engaging conversations we would have several times, she would say, Donnelly, with your tiny little britches, you would just keep doing comedy because there's an audience for us, and that audience is not being catered to. There are not enough of us out there, the mom comedians. And at the time, I was like, yeah, Leanne Morgan, you're right. And she was headlining everywhere. And she's like, never quit, Donnelly, with those little britches. Never quit. And I ended up quitting. I had to quit.
But you're back. Yeah, have you been in contact with her since you've been back?
No, but when I did Kill Tony, I took a clip from the part where I talked about her with Ryan Simpson, because he gave me, you know, crap about quitting, but Leanne Morgan didn't quit, but I mentioned her, and then I tagged her, And I even said something, and she's got 1.1 million followers on Instagram. So I thought there's no way she's going to see this, but I'm going to tag her. And then she posted the story about that. She took that clip and made a story and posted it. And I was like, I wonder if it was her. I wonder if it was her account. So I went to the account that was listed, and it was her 1.1 million following account. It was her verified account. And then at the bottom, she wrote, "Way to go, doll." And I went, "She always said doll."
That's her.
I was like, "It's her."
That's awesome. Well, maybe you guys can connect. That would be that would be even better. A nice part of your comeback story.
Right.
Wouldn't that be amazing? I know I've worked with her at least three times that I recall, a couple times at Cap City and then the casino gig. And it would just be a dream to open for her again because it would just, oh my God, I would freak out. I would immediately call you guys and go, "You have to have me back on the show so I can talk about this."
And we would say yes.
Absolutely.
Now? Like right now? You want to do it now? We'll make it. We'll make it happen.
As long as we manifest it, right?
That's right.
We're manifesting it right now.
All right. Have you always been a manifester? Do you have your vision board? And
I'm that person. I've got crystals all over the house. I have my vision boards. Okay. I taught my son all this. My son is very manly. He's 6'3", wears the cowboy hat, the big belt buckle, the cowboy boots. He went to A&M, and I loved it when he would call me because he's very much his dad, 50% dad, 50% mom. His dad's a hard worker and, you know, very serious and always working with his heavy accent and all his country stuff. My son would call me, and I swear to God, he would say, "Mother, I was just feeling real zen today at school, and I thought I'd give you a call and see how you were doing."
I'm like, real zen.
Wow.
"You're feeling zen today. I love it." And he's big into manifesting, and we talk about it all the time. It's so interesting with somebody with a Southern accent to really be involved with it. And I'll give him crystals, and we talk about it, and he's like, "Mother, that shit seems to be working real well." And I'm like,
"You don't often think about that with that accent." That's all. I mean, it's great to hear, but yeah, you don't put those two together.
Does Big Belt Buckle's son know that you talk about this in public? Is he going to be a little like?
No, he'll laugh at this. Yeah, he gets a kick out of it. He's coming to my show. I went on Thursday, and he's going to be there. And he's always so proud, and it's so
cute. Awesome.
I had a show at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club in Las Vegas with my friend Kat C, and I was the feature, so I had a little bit more time. But he was in the audience, and it was my husband's 60th birthday, too, so we had 40-something people fly in from all over the country. And I was doing my bit about my son, and I said, "Hey, you know what? Because people don't really think he talks that way. He really does talk with a very heavy country Southern accent."
Yeah.
And I said, "Hey, everybody, I know I did this whole story, but I'd like to prove to you that my son really does talk that way. Do y'all want to have him come up on stage?" And he came up on stage, and it was adorable. Like, maybe the microphone, he was like, "How y'all doing?" I mean, it was so cute. And I did a whole post about it. It was adorable.
I love it.
Oh, that is nice.
That's very cool.
He's embracing it and his
crystals. He's very shy. Yeah, he's shy, but he loved it, and he was right there present for the moment. He said he'd had a couple of drinks, so he was going to get on up there.
So. Just enough lubrication to come on stage.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you had mentioned, you know, the medical field. So you're doing a weekly show.
Yeah.
The Armin Men's Health Podcast.
Yeah, Armour Men's Health Show. Dr. Mystery is his real name. He's our urologist or surgeon that I work with.
Is his first name really
Dick?
No.
Oh. Yeah, that's another
Sandeep?
Doctor.
What's that?
Yes, sir. Sandeep is his name. His nickname is Sunny, and he goes by, of course, Dr. Mystery, MISTRY.
Yeah.
We've had this show, the podcast, and it's a radio show in Austin on KLBJ on Saturdays and Tuesdays, and then I turn it into a podcast. I produce it out and put it out. But it is the most time you'll ever have with a urologist for free. And we answer the most ridiculous questions, and they're awesome. And they're all anonymous. We'd answer them anonymously, but I've never talked about penises so much in my life. It's just
twice a week.
Yeah. We record once a week, and then I push it out to the radio show that's on twice a week, but same show twice a week.
Sure.
But we've had 1,000 questions about, Peyronie's disease, which is the bent penis.
Yep.
And lots of guys sticking things in holes they shouldn't. And it's kind of amazing.
They fell and sat on them. It's always, they always fall and sat on it.
They always yeah. find new stuff. That's
absolutely.
For sure.
And then
so
we
whose
have
idea was to start that?
It was my boss's idea. Yeah, my boss, Dr. Mystery, he said, we should have a radio show because he tried TV, and he's very charismatic and very cool and easy to listen to. He's got a great voice. he said, let's start a radio show. And I was like, sure. And my dad, who was the biggest KLBJ fan in the world, he listened to KLBJ, news radio, KLBJ here in Austin every day of his life. He just absolutely loved it. He had passed away just before we started the show. And I was so bummed. That would have just been a dream come true. Maybe not listening to his daughter talk about penises, but but I have a show. Yeah, but it's called Armerman's Health Show with Dr. Mystery and Donnelly, and it's just it's so much fun. I just we just answer questions all the time. We have guests on. We have specialists from around Austin, different surgeons and specialists on the show too. So it's really.
I was listening to a few. A plastic surgeon on.
That guy, yeah, he can make your penis really big.
Is that the fallophil guy?
He does something similar. Yeah, he does. Yeah. He puts some fillers into the penis and it pumps it up. And then he also does a cosmetic thing and they do the Botox in the scrotal area. So the Scrotox and my doctor, Dr. Mystery, he can do a surgery to take the fat pad down. So your penis looks bigger. And then Dr. Dellinger, the plastic surgeon, adds more to the penis. Like it's crazy what we can do now. It's nuts.
Do we get a discount because we had you on the podcast?
For sure. Yeah.
I think our trip to Austin is going to have to be an extra week.
Yeah, we're going to stay longer than expected.
Have you ever had anything that you were like, that's fucking disgusting? There has to be some gross shit on the show.
Oh, for sure. It's really sad that there's a lot of guys who can't see their penis anymore. They've gotten really overweight or they've gotten really sick. And so they have to sit down to pee and then they just dribble everywhere.
Yeah.
And those are really sad. We have a ton of, and then we see patients too. Like I'm not a provider, but we have all these patients coming in that have these incredible problems. One guy came in, this is not breaking HIPAA because of course I won't use his name, but very professional looking man. He came in and he didn't want to say what was wrong. And we were like, well, sir, we have to put something, our front desk people were trying to figure out what to do and how to get him in the room. And he was like, I'm not telling anybody anything. Long story short, this man had a fetish and he stuck a glass straw, like a stir straw, into his urethra to try to make his penis harder 2 years ago.
What?
Oh my God.
So 2 years of his life, it has been in his body and he was dribbling now. Now he had to wear a diaper, an adult diaper. He was a professional man. He came in a suit. Like I knew he was somebody important at some job. He was very handsome. Like I was like, I mean, he's an older man, but I was like, this is weird. I was the practice manager at the time. So I was trying to be, trying to get all
trying to be professional.
And I was like, oh my God, we're so going to take care of you. Well, I'm not going to tell anybody. Oh my God, we're telling everybody. Like, yeah.
Well, I'm kidding. I'm assuming you got it out. Oh.
So then Dr. Mystery had to do surgery. He found this glass straw. It was this long. It was longer, like a pen. This long. He found it in his bladder, had to surgically remove it. And the human body is fascinating to me. His body grew a stone this big around the top of this glass stirrer. So I put it in a shadow box and put it in Dr. Mystery's office on the wall.
He still has it.
He still has it.
And yeah. It didn't break.
It didn't break. It came out completely, just like a completely put together glass jaw with a stone this big on the end of it. And we've pulled out a lot of things from patients and the doctors will bring it back to me and then I'll put them in shadow boxes. So around our offices, you'll see these fascinating objects that were once inside of people's bodies.
Oh my goodness. 2 years.
Y'all, I hope you can ask a question. This is hard to recover from. Oh, I pulled the cord out.
I don't know how you follow that one up with anything.
I know. It's hard, pun intended. It was awful. Bless his heart.
So when a patient comes in like that and tells you the story, and then, of course, you don't do it that day. I'm assuming you set up an appointment. When he leaves, you be like, girls, come here. I got to tell you this.
Wait. You're assuming they sent glass straw guy home? I hope you just cut him open that day and took it out.
Yeah, it was pretty sure. But it's been 2 years. Like
it's been 2 years. A few more days?
Okay.
So Dr. Mystery, did surgery on him a few days later. But yeah, that was one of the most fascinating ones. We had another patient take in the emergency room. He took, remember the Elmer's glue with the pointy top?
Yeah.
He unscrewed it and he put the top of the Elmer's glue into his urethra and squeezed it as hard as he could so the glue would shoot up his penis. So I don't know what that's about. These things happen.
God, guys are so...
Guys, We do dumb shit all the time, but we just keep getting dumber.
I know we taught our boys a lot of things of not what to do, you know, when growing up. Because I've been on the show, you know, they were teenagers when we started the show, and so I would come home and say, "Guys, my son, do not do this."
Right? Oh my God. Okay, we have to change subject. How do you end up with a chapter in a book, but with the Shark Tank guy?
Hey, yeah, I brought this is the book without my picture. This is the prototype. So the final round has my picture with Kevin Harrington. Great story. There was this thing I saw on Instagram. I was like, Kevin Harrington wants to hear from you. Do you have an intriguing story, kind of thing? And I was like, I had just gotten back into comedy, so this was like May of 2024. And I thought, Kevin Harrington, I'm a big Kevin Harrington Shark Tank fan. And so I filled out all the information. What's your story? And mine was about getting back into comedy as a middle-aged woman who's empty nesting, who didn't give up on her dream. So it was very authentic, this place I came from. And I was a very professional person. Like, I was pharmaceutical sales rep, and I was in medical sales and medical management, and then practice manager. Now I'm doing this radio show podcast thing. And so they picked me to do the book. And so 15 of us were chosen, so we each got a chapter.
Okay.
So I go to Florida to launch this book with Kevin Harrington. So we did all the like pre-video stuff, the launching and all the stuff before the book came out, because it was on his time frame. So we did all these green screen pictures of us holding the book and spending time with Kevin Harrington and sitting on a couch with Kevin Harrington being interviewed. And we went to an actual bookstore, and we were signing books together. And I have all these amazing pictures. It was so much fun. But so we get to Florida, and then they hand me the book, and they say, well, we're going to go in order of everybody on the back of the book. So in order of the back of the book, I'm the first person on the back of the book. So I was like, oh, that's me. I'm the first one. So they were like, Donnelly Lamondola, you're first. You're taking all your pictures and video and interview with Kevin Harrington. This is the first time I've seen the book, is at that moment. I'm standing in the green room, like, and I was like, holy moly. So then I open the book, and then I go to the first page, and I'm the first chapter. What the heck happens? I'm standing there. I'm just like, oh my God, how did I do this? I mean, I ended up being the first chapter. It was creates just a whole story about how I didn't give up. And, you know, my previous life doing comedy, my little tricks of the trade, what it meant for me to come back to comedy, you know, just what I went through kind of getting there. And they a little AI was involved, I think, because my writing wasn't on point. I think I'm a good writer, but I didn't write well for this book. It wasn't, you know, I didn't change anybody's minds about me being a smart person. Not the smart person in this book. But it was a good story and things that I do now that I cherish. And when I get a gig now, when I get a coffee shop gig versus a Moms Unhinged sold out gig, I still get very emotional and cry. Like I don't know if, unless you've gone through giving up a dream and then getting the second opportunity, a second chance to really dive into it again. And this time was so much better than the last time I did comedy. I'm doing so many more gigs, and the opportunities, I treat them all the same. When I get paid $50, I feel like it's $5,000. I can't believe I'm getting a Venmo from that guy from who produced the show. And I'm like, how did I get $50? What?
Yeah.
It just feels so good and validating that. When you can ask my husband, he's like, you got $50, don't cry. I'm like, oh my God, $50. I'm like, that sounds nice. I can't believe I'll give you
$50 to stop crying.
If I were him, I'd be like, you're happy you got $50? It's dick day. Yeah.
But I think, yeah, that's just what I'm going through right now. Just, I can't, I got Terry just telling me that story. I just...
Well, things are working out. I mean, that's just one thing after another. And yeah. I think when you're as positive as you are, which you just by talking with you, how positive you are, think good things are going to come about.
Oh, thanks. It's just, I can't tell you. It's just been such a blessing. Like I get literally emotional. Now I end my set by thanking the audience. I'm so sincere about them supporting live comedy and letting me come back. And I thank the producer, and then I always start crying again. I'm going to be known as the crying comedian. It's going to be weird.
Mm-hmm.
We all got to be known for something.
Might as well, yeah.
Dimples, beard, crying. That's, you know.
There you go.
There's
another T-shirt.
That's right. The crying comedian.
Come cry with me.
Love it.
We'll cry together.
That's awesome. That's Well, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. We, like I said, we love talking to comedians, and we love that scene down there. And we can't wait to come down there and hang out sometime.
And good stories. Yeah. I mean, you know, just good stories we like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, come down. There's so many of us that'll just, you know, wrap y'all under our wing, and we'll just go downtown together. And it's just such a great, fun, and like I said, engaging, positive experience that I know you guys would love. And I think it'd be fun to talk about too on the podcast after you've gone through it. Since you're big Kill Tony fans, then you can go to Kill Tony. I mean, the whole experience is
outstanding. Yeah. That would be amazing. Yeah.
Can't wait.
Great experience. Awesome. So let everybody know where the best place to find you.
Thanks. Yeah, my website is, it's fairly new and I'm super proud of it. It's DonnaLeeComedy.com. And then you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. My handle is @DonnaLeeComedy. And I'm on YouTube, that's also @DonnaLeeComedy. So I'm trying to be everywhere. Just come see me. It's a lot of fun. I'm going to be in 4 states in August. So I'm all over the place. And then in a whole bunch of shows in Austin and all around Texas.
And nice. All the dates are on their website?
All the dates are on my website. I just got my first college gig. I'm represented by a company called Metropolis Management, and they just got me a college gig. So I'm terrified and excited about that at the same time. So I'm going to be on the college circuit. I'm going to be everybody's mom, apparently. So.
Well, expect to be hit on a lot. All I got to say.
Oh, real quick, before we go, the Kill Tony thing about the stepmother thing.
Yeah.
In the washer thing, I did, obviously, if you watch it again.
You didn't know what they were talking about.
I had no idea.
Yeah. No clue.
And I said, he's like, have you ever been stuck in a washer? And my response was, probably.
Right. You're thinking, just getting a sock out. Yeah.
What? I can't believe I said that, but I didn't know. So then I, of course, had to Google it. And then I was just mortified. So I'm hoping if I get back on to Kill Tony, I'm totally bringing that up and say, I did the research. I know what that means now.
Oh, yes. Well, they'll jump right on that.
Yeah.
You did the research. Yep.
Yeah, you did the research. Tell us about it. But yeah. It was pretty cool. And then I made kind of a fumble on one of my posts where I was like, because you guys, you know, decided I've got stepmom energy. I've decided to be everybody's stepmom. Well, I didn't present that as sexual, but of course the comments were, and I was like, uh-oh, I did it again. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I would just leave the stepmother step out for a while. Yeah,
that's the, like the kink across the United States right now. So yeah, you might want to.
Pretty sure it's number one. The number one thing on Pornhub. It's you type in an S, and that's the first thing that comes up.
That and browsers, is that what it's called?
Yeah,
I didn't know what that was, and somebody was like, oh my God, you do so well on browsers. And my comment was, oh my God, thanks, I'll check it out. Like, I had no idea what that
was. The innocence is the best.
I love it.
Yes.
I'll check it out. That's great.
I have no idea. Well, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, it's been such a joy.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Good night.
Thank you for listening. The tavern is closed for now, but we'd love to have you back for more fun next time. Seriously, though, get your asses out of here.
Friendly suggestion. Those beautiful views deserve some new frames. Custom designs and superior service make getting new windows a work of art. A free, no-pressure renewal by Andersen consultation is just a call or click away. When it's time to talk windows, we'll bring the wisdom. Renewal by Andersen.